Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and if you'd like to help us design our new website, I invite you to visit twit.to/navtest. We've got 8 quick questions we'd like to ask you that will help us make the navigation easier to use. That's twit.to/navtest. Thanks a lot. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Saturday, December 13th, 2014. This is episode 1,143. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Harry's. For guys who want a great shave experience for a fraction of what you're paying now, go to harrys.com. And just in time for the gift season, for new and existing customers, get $5 off the limited edition Winter Winston set by entering the code TechGuyHoliday at checkout. And by Blue Apron. Blue Apron will send you all the ingredients to cook fresh, delicious meals with simple step-by-step instructions right to your door. See what's on the menu this week and get your first 2 meals free by going to blueapron.com/twit. That's blueapron.com/twit. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, cell phones. I keep switching around now, so I guess I'm not on any team. Maybe that'll make you happy. Oh, I'm not on Team iPhone. All right. And I've been getting nasty emails from about 2 people that I don't say enough good things about BlackBerry. And hope lives eternal sometimes. When you're a fan of a team, I know, because we have a really rotten football team here in San Francisco. 2 of them, actually. And they're not rotten. They're disappointing. But if you're a real fan, you know, they call the 49ers fan the 49ers faithful because you never give up on your team. I think we have BlackBerry faithful in the world who never, ever give up. I posted somebody has been commenting on one of my threads about, you know, Android versus iOS. And he says, I even throw in Windows Phone, just to be fair. He says, you'd ever talk about BlackBerry. So I posted a sales graph of BlackBerry phone sales over the last 10 years. And it's interesting to see it go up, up, up. 2007, that's when the iPhone came out. Yeah. And then crashed. And he says, yes, but the new phone is so great. People are going to... you know, I admire that. That is a person who's not a front runner. That is a person who believes, but see, it's not a team sport. And you probably shouldn't get a BlackBerry passport because there's no future there. And I'm, you know, one of the conversations I've been having a lot lately with my Windows expert friends is, when is Microsoft going to give up on Windows Phone? You know, they're getting some hopeful sales from Russia and places where you can't get the iPhone readily. But it's not enough. And once a platform like BlackBerry or Windows Phone starts to slide, it accelerates because all the people who write software for it, and really software is what makes these platforms work. I mean, they work as, they're all phones fine. It's not because it's a better phone. A phone is a phone is a phone. It's the software that runs on it. And once the software developers see the slide begin, they jump ship. So I'm thinking it's going to be iPhone and Android for the next, you know, foreseeable future. Things never, you know, technology, one thing we know for sure, things don't ever stay the same. Well, here's something Verizon has announced. It's going to start offering a program that will give you encrypted phone calls on your Verizon phone. End-to-end encryptions on iOS, Android, or BlackBerry devices. You'll have to put a special app. And, oh, by the way, it's got a back door for the NSA. They even said it does. These phone calls will be absolutely secure unless it's a law enforcement agency, in which case they can listen in. Now, a lot of what security experts say is there's a couple problems with that. First of all, if you put a backdoor in any program, the bad guys are going to find it and take advantage of it. That's when you intentionally break scramble, you know, this encryption technology for anybody, it's essentially broken, period. That's problem number one. Problem two, part of the reason we want encryption is because we don't want the NSA spying on our phone calls. So thank you, Verizon. Some things maybe don't ever change. Verizon, one of the first companies to immediately offer to law enforcement anything you want, whatever you want. You want backdoor access? No problem. At least they're telling us, so you can choose not to use it. Have you been speaking of encryption? One of the reasons everybody should use encryption, it's very obvious now with Sony, this Sony break-in. And you know, here's a question for you. Remember when all the naked pictures of celebrities were being distributed? The celebrities said, and I think with some justice, don't look at them. You're just party to the break-in, the criminals, if you look at them. Don't look at them. Well, here we got Sony. Basically, everything that was on Sony Picture Entertainment, hard drives, everything has been released now or is being in the process of being released by hackers who broke into their system. Everything. Email, incriminating emails. We know how much they paid people. James Franco got paid $6,000 to drive himself to the move, to the work. We're hearing the story of what happened to the Steve Jobs movie and kind of intimate. I feel a little dirty reading it. And it strikes me, maybe that's the same thing. Maybe we shouldn't be reading it. Maybe we're kind of supporting the bad guys, but it's such good gossip. Maybe we should just kind of leave Sony alone. No, there are no naked pictures of Walkmans, DLR in our chat room. No. It is fascinating, though, to read the deal memos, and they're mean. The head of Sony Pictures said some mean things about Angelina Jolie. She thought that was a private email, right? But all the emails were leaked. Not private anymore. Oy, oy, oy. I'm not gonna read it unless it falls in front of my eyes and I can't help it. Apparently Sony was hacked a year ago. This really, Sony kind of, I have to say, kind of deserves this. They keep getting hacked. They were hacked a year ago, and they decided in February of last year, and they decided not to say anything about it. Actually, this year. They decided not to say anything. Emails dated February 12, 2014, Sony Vice President of Legal Compliance tells her colleagues a Sony server may have been hacked, but she recommended against providing any notification to individuals. We've been hacked, but don't tell anybody. Maybe they won't notice. Oops. Maybe some evidence that hacking in February is what led to the most recent hacking. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, your calls right after this. Minimally talented spoiled brat. Wow. No, not you, Heather Hammond. Angelina Jolie. That's the head of Sony Pictures, Amy Pascal, talking about Angelina Jolie. And I'm just looking at a picture from Wednesday after those emails leaked out of the two talking. And Angelina Jolie does not look happy. Does not look happy. I've got to stop looking. I don't want to read it. I'm not going to read it. Okay, I'll make my pledge to you. You can keep me honest on this. I'm not going to read any more of this gossip from Hollywood.
Don't read gossip.
No.
Hey, listen, as far as gossip goes, that stuff is boring. Right?
Well,
I think.
Some of it.
Certainly written worse things at work.
Well, that's what's, you know, it's true. They're no different than everybody else.
Cautionary tale to us all.
So the story is that in Hollywood now, nobody wants to do anything with Sony ever again because, you know, this isn't the first time they've been hacked. B, everybody's going away from email because, you know, Phone calls. That's right. They're trying to do everything in phone calls. Not like the NSA or anybody could listen into that.
Well, now you have to meet at restaurants again.
What are you going to do?
Go to Le Dome, et cetera.
What are you going to do? You're going to, you have to go to a park and hope. What are you going to do?
Right, because you can't even trust the waiters at the restaurants.
I have a thought. Why don't you just not say mean things?
Nah.
I would, one of my staffers, Jeffrey Needles, was telling me he had a professor in business school who said, every time you have an idea, you should practice saying it, Your Honor, the idea was, and then if you feel like you could do that in a court of law, then go ahead.
Okay.
Yeah. So maybe we just kind of from now on assume that everything we say could be leaked.
Mm-hmm.
Could be revealed to the public, and now just starts being nice.
Right, but Hollywood's cutthroat. I mean, you have to say why you're choosing one actress over another.
Well,
so
be gentle.
Name.
Be gentle.
Okay, she's just
be
not
gentle.
As good. Yeah.
Well, in this case, they wanted to, so there. This is about the Steve Jobs movie, right?
Yeah.
And they wanted the director David Fincher to direct the Steve Jobs movie, but they were worried that Angelina Jolie wanted Fincher, and they didn't want to make Jolie mad, Fincher for her Cleopatra movie. But the reason that Amy Pascal was saying bad things about her is because she was saying, oh, you know what, Angelina, she'll stop doing that for 6 months to do something else. She just moves, you know, she's fickle.
Hmm.
But I think there would have been a nicer way to say that than minimally talented spoiled brat.
Well, and who was the guy player in this? He's like, you'll never eat lunch in this
Scott
town again.
Rudin, yeah.
What?
It really is just like those old Hollywood movies. They really are.
He's like, don't believe me? Wait and see.
In the way, that's kind of an interesting thing all by itself. They actually do act like that. Like the movies.
We just don't see him chomping on a cigar
they really
while he
do.
Says it.
Yeah, at one point, Ari Emanuel, who is the real-life super agent who Ari Gold of Entourage is based on, comes in and pulls an Ari. It says like Ari Gold said it. I don't know if you've ever seen the show. That's meaningless. But it's just like TV. It's just like fiction. It's real. All right. But I'm not reading anymore. And I'm not going to tell you anymore. We're going to do the right thing. We're going to no more gossip. We're going to talk about technology. And we're going to do it with you. 8888 Ask Leo's the number. 888-827-5536. Website is techguylabs.com. Heather Hammond has been gathering callers, and I am ready to begin.
I fixed Mark's cowlick. He looks amazing now.
You powdered his nose?
Yeah, that too.
All right.
He's in Yorba Linda and on line 4 with an issue that a lot of us are seeing in our inboxes these days.
Uh-oh. Hey, Mark. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, morning, Leo. How's it going?
It's going great. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. Hey, maybe you can help me out. I got a brand new iPhone Plus 6, and I'm still getting used to the email system.
Gigantic phone.
Yeah, exactly. But it's great. You get used to it. But I was expecting a package from FedEx, and I happened to get an email from FedEx that turned out to be a bogus email saying, hey, we're having trouble delivering your package. Please click on this link. And without thinking, I clicked on the link on my iPhone.
That's okay.
Is that okay?
No, you'd only be risky if you did it on Windows. Almost all of those, you're right to be nervous. What did the link do? Take you to a website?
No, it didn't take me anywhere. It just like went suddenly gray, and then nothing else happened.
Yeah,
and I've been afraid to link, sync up with my PC.
No, I think you're fine. So the way that these things generally work, the bell went off. It's a little late, but it went off, and that's good. I mean, that's what we're trying to train everybody to think twice before they click those links. And, of course, you were waiting for a package, so you believed it.
Exactly. It was just the timing was right there, and it caused me to hit that link.
Yeah, so it's always a bad idea to click links in emails or anywhere else, because if it were a phishing attack, which is these are called phishing attacks, then that link would lead, instead of to a FedEx tracking site, it would lead to something might even look like a FedEx tracking site, but it would have malware embedded on it. If the target machine were correct. Now, you're in this case on an iPhone, highly unlikely, partly because of the way the iPhone's designed, but partly because the hackers probably expected it to be Windows. Highly unlikely that it would impact you. In fact, even most Windows users wouldn't be impacted. Only those who hadn't patched or had certain vulnerabilities would be impacted. So you don't have to worry.
Oh, I see. And now, as a follow-up, is there any software app for virus protection?
You don't need it.
You don't need it.
No. The thing that's happened is that the operating systems that we use on our desktops are pretty old. I mean, I don't mean Windows 8 is old, but the base underneath it, the way it's designed is old, goes way back to Windows XP and even before that. And viruses weren't really quite the concern. Security wasn't quite the concern it is today. Mobile operating systems are more modern. They were designed, you know, by people who knew that these systems would be attacked. It's one of the reasons the iPhone makes it very difficult for you to open, for instance, a file from one program and another program, one app and another app, because the apps can't do that. They can't talk to one another. So it's very hard to infect an iPhone. It's nothing to worry about.
That's great. Hey, yeah. Thank you so very much. I really appreciate your show.
Yeah, thanks for calling. I'm glad you asked. I'm glad, more importantly, that you had the bell went off. And that's really, I hate to say it, but it's really important in this day and age that we all kind of be a little bit aware of the risks. I wish we didn't have to. I really do. But fortunately, once you get it kind of ingrained in you that, yeah, be careful clicking links and that kind of thing, then it's kind of automatic. And, you know, you had that feeling, but it was after you clicked it. So next time, let's make it before you click it. Just hesitate. Now, it may in fact be that was a real tracking email, et cetera, et cetera. In fact, it might be that it was a real tracking email and it just didn't work on the iPhone. Despite the success of the iPhone, and really now there are more iPhones out there than there are desktop computers, I think. I think we're close to it anyway. More smartphones, surely. Bad guys still are designing for the desktop. It's hard to design bad malware for mobile devices. That's why we don't see any, or very little. It's very rare and usually highly ineffective. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the number. More of your calls right after this. And home theater, too. Doing that bump to bump, it's Scott Wilkinson, our home theater guru. He's from the AVS Forum at avsforum.com. He also does the Home Theater Geeks podcast. As many have said, the best podcast on the network. On the Twit Podcast Network.
That is so kind. I love hearing it.
Yay.
But thank you very much.
Yay. So, Scotty, what's up? What's new?
Hey, well, tons of stuff, of course, as always. Jaden in the chat room actually asked a question that I was going to talk about anyway, which is, is there such a thing as a future-proof 4K TV, HDCP 2.2, blah, blah, blah? All these acronyms and stuff, and somebody sent me an email too with a similar question about: is it the best time to buy an AV receiver now with 4K coming out and this new copy protection HDCP 2.2 and so on? And the answer really is no. There's no way to future-proof because things are still unsettled. Here we are at the end of 2014. 4K TVs are now just out there everywhere. And somebody else sent me a question asking, why are there all these 4K TVs out there when there's very little content? I recently went to a SMPTE meeting in which it was stated that the 4K TV manufacturers brought them out and they caught Hollywood off guard. You know, the content producers, the studios and so on said, wait a second. 4K TVs? What's this? Now we got to deal with this. We got to make 4K content come out for consumers with these new 4K TVs. So there's all sorts of things that are not yet settled about it, but the TVs are coming out in droves.
But Scott, I was able to get a 4K TV for $800 at the Black Friday sale at Walmart.
Exactly.
I want to keep it. Actually,
well,
you know,
you can keep it.
Yeah, and it won't look bad,
no,
but it won't necessarily take advantage of the official 4K standards when they come out.
That's correct. Joe Kane, one of my mentors in the video tech world, made a very good statement. He said, you know, today 4K TVs are essentially HD TVs with more pixels. But everything else about them is the same as what we have now.
The electronics, the internals.
I'm talking about the same range of colors and the same dynamic range, the same difference between black and white. Everything about them is the same as what we have now, except the panels, which have four times more pixels. And that turns out to be relatively easy to do for the manufacturers. They already have these gigantic plants that produce these LCD TVs. Most of them are LCD. In fact, all of them are. Well, we have a few OLEDs coming down the pike, but for now, it's all LCD TVs. And so they have these great big giant facilities that can churn out these TVs. And it's relatively easy, it turns out, to make four times as many pixels in a glass panel. But then, as you say, all the guts and all of the infrastructure, shall we say, is all the same. So it's not going to look bad, the TV that you bought this year at Black Friday. It's 4K TV. It's just not going to take advantage of what is coming down the pike in, I'd say, 1 to 2 years. It's going to look great. It's going to look fine. But the biggest problem I see is what is copy protection. And I know you have a big problem with copy protection in general, but it's there. It's going to be there. The studios are going to insist upon it. And we now have this new form of copy protection called HDCP 2.2, high definition copy protection. And that requires hardware. That requires a hardware modification in order to implement. And so if your TV doesn't have it, if your AV receiver doesn't have it, if you're running your high definition or 4K stuff through your AV receiver, if that doesn't have it, then you're in trouble. You're not going to see that 4K content. It's especially important next year when we get 4K Blu-ray, which is looking more and more likely that we're going to actually get it. I hope to see something about it at CES next month.
So the bottom line is, don't be in a hurry. You probably could stick with what you already have, since so many people have already bought them. And the reason the companies are coming out with these 4Ks is to get you to buy now, knowing that you'll have to buy again in a few years. So don't fall for this.
Well, that's true, and that is, I think, the main motivation. The TV manufacturers
Strike while the iron's hot. You know,
they wanted to get something out there that would induce people to buy a new TV, because after all, 3D. You know, came
didn't do it.
Didn't do it. Yeah, exactly.
So, great article in the Wirecutter and the Sweet Home. These are websites I love. In fact, highly recommend the Wirecutter, because they cut through it all and they say, look, this is the model to get. They do TVs, but they do all kinds of electronics. Yep. They researched, I wish we'd had this information beforehand, but remember it for next year, 54,000 Black Friday deals.
Wow.
They looked at the prices. They looked at the products. They looked around to see if there were better prices. It turns out a lot of times what retailers do is say, normally $4.99, now just $1.99. But normally $4.99 never was true.
Right.
They were never sold at $4.99. They just made that up.
Right, right.
Of 54,000 holiday deals, only a bit more than 300 of them, less than 1%, are actually deals.
Wow.
This is New York Times had the article this week, but you could also go to Wirecutter or the Sweet Home, which are great websites for buying stuff. The truth is and I've always suspected this, but it's great to see somebody actually do the research. Those Black Friday deals, not such a deal.
Not such a deal.
Not such a great deal. For instance, Best Buy was selling a 55-inch 4K Samsung TV set for $899 on Black Friday.
Right.
Discounted $500 from the original price.
Right.
In fact, they have since raised the price to $1,299. But the Wirecutter folks looked at the set. They said it had a very bad case of motion blur.
Yeah.
The 4K resolution only holds true on a picture that's not moving.
Yes, yes,
On
absolutely.
An image that's moving, you'd be lucky to get 1K. So it was a kind of a stinker TV set, and that's why they were moving it out.
Yeah. And that was a Samsung. That was a name brand, a good brand generally.
Could have fooled me.
Well, that is another very important point, the bit about motion resolution. You know, most of the time you go into a TV store and you look at their demo and it's all either still pictures or very slow moving nature scenes. And you go, ooh.
So you mean the resolution actually goes down when there's a lot of movement?
Especially on an LCD TV, you know, because they have this motion blur problem, which is why they invented frame interpolation, which inserts new frames in between the actual frames and cleans things up, makes it sharper, but it also introduces this artifact called the soap opera effect, which makes it look all plasticky. You and I have talked about that before. Yeah.
There are better 4K TVs that don't have as much motion blur. Is that the case?
Well, yes, that is the case. If you flash the backlight, for example, you can clean up motion blur. But LCDs, this is an endemic problem to LCDs. They suffer from it naturally. There's no way around it. The only way around it is to get an OLED or a plasma, which you can't get anymore, and certainly never could get 4K, except for a gigantic Panasonic 152-inch. Yeah, that was 4K, but you had to build your house around it.
So stick with what you got.
Yeah.
Don't get sucked in. You may get a worse TV.
You may,
and
especially one of these low-end deals.
And we'll probably wait for 4K OLED, OLED TVs.
Right, which is coming. The LG has announced a couple. In fact, they might even be out already. And I'm sure they'll announce some new ones at CES.
No hurry, though. No hurry.
No.
Scott Wilkinson, avsforum.com, and Home Theater Geeks at twit.tv/HTG. More of your calls coming up right after this.
Yes, PsyOps, they do count on impulse buying. Although, even a good deal on a TV, I can't imagine that being too impulsive. Maybe. It's possible. Thank you, Mike B. I really appreciate it. Hey, Taylor Karras, good to see you. Magpie asks, do the 4K TVs have any upscaling to improve display of my 1080i camcorder? Well, all 4K TVs have upscalers in them because they have to. They have to take whatever's coming in and upscale it to use all the pixels on the screen. Whether or not that will make 1080i footage look that much better depends upon the upscaler and the deinterlacer, because not only do you have a fewer number of pixels coming off your camcorder, you also have an interlaced signal. And so you need to deinterlace it, and deinterlacing circuits generally are pretty good these days. But you never know. You want to check that out. That's one good thing to do. The Spears and Munsell Blu-ray called HD Benchmark, High Definition Benchmark, has some footage on it that is interlaced. It was shot at 1080i, and it's stored on the disc at 1080i. And if you send it to the TV from a Blu-ray player on which you have disabled the Blu-ray player's deinterlacer and have it say send out whatever is on the disc directly without doing anything to it, then you will see how good the TV is at deinterlacing, as well as upscaling or upconverting. It's all pretty complicated, but it's the things you sort of need to know. Lawn Dog asks, explain more of this trickery on 4K. I'm not sure what you mean by that, so give me a little bit more and I'll be happy to talk about it. Wow Hunter asks, how does plasma and OLED compare when it comes to screen burning, or really burn in, or image retention? Plasma has got a lot better from the early days before its demise. But it's still, you still wanted to be a little careful, especially in the first 100 hours or so. OLED, I would not have thought would have had that problem, but it turns out it does. According to those who have done reviews, it does, in fact, have some image retention. Now, I want to say that there's a difference between image retention and burn-in. And the difference is image retention is temporary, burn-in is permanent. And OLED can suffer from image retention, which goes away after a while as long as you don't keep the same. What happens is if you have a part of the screen that stays static, like, for example, the ticker underneath at the bottom of the screen on a news or financial program, or you're playing a video game where there's a score card up in the corner or a bug of some sort, and it stays there for days and days, then you get a ghost of that section of the screen there, even when that material isn't there. Now, with image retention, it's temporary. It'll go away after a while, and there are things you can do to help it go away. Plasmas used to have a screen wipe function that would help get rid of that. But I don't know if OLEDs typically do these days or not. But as I say, I didn't think that the OLEDs would necessarily suffer from image retention or burn-in, but in fact, they really do. So,
all right. You want to stick around for the top of the hour?
Happy to. Absolutely.
All right. Thanks, Scott. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number, 888-827-5536. One thing a lot of people will be looking at for the holidays as a gift or as a stocking stuffer are these new devices. I guess they're not that new, that put your TV on the internet. Roku, Apple TV, Amazon has a couple now, the Fire TV and the Fire TV Stick. Google has a couple now, the Google Nexus TV, and which is not great, and then the Google Chromecast, which is and is only $35. That's a good stocking stuffer. The Chromecast plugs into the HDMI port on your TV or your AV receiver, and then allows you to use your device, whether Android or iPhone, to cast stuff to it. YouTube, Netflix, and there's a growing list of things you can cast to it. It works really nicely. And the remote becomes your smart device, whether your tablet or your iPhone or your Android device. I think also the Roku is the king of the hill. They're offering some pretty good deals for the holidays. The Roku 3. They do make a Roku stick. It was a little crashy, and it requires a special kind of HDMI port, something called an MHL port, which most people do not have. So stick with the Roku 3 box, but nice. And I think they were offering, last I saw, $30 off, which makes it $70, which is a good deal. It's a good deal. That's a good holiday gift, even if you have a smart TV. And most TVs now are so-called smart TVs. They have apps. They have Netflix buttons on the remote. They never do it quite as well on the TV as the third-party boxes do. I'm a big fan. Somebody in the chat room saying, Apple TV or Roku, which should I get, Jim Tez? It really depends on where you get your content from. The only reason to get the Apple TV, the only reason, in my opinion, is if you buy a lot of movies or TV shows from iTunes, because it's the only device that can play them back. Maybe a secondary benefit is if you use iPhone, iPad, or Macintosh computers, you can AirPlay from those devices to your TV very easily. But you need an Apple TV to do that. So that's the big reason to get an Apple TV. One reason not to is I'm pretty sure this year, 2015, will bring us a new Apple TV that will have 4K capability, perhaps. And I'm hoping an app store that will allow it to be more expandable. Right now, it's not expandable at all. You have to use what Apple gives you. And that's that. The other reason not to get an Apple TV is if instead of Apple, you get your TV or movies from Google or Amazon. If you get your stuff from Amazon, then the Apple TV is a bad idea. You can never watch Amazon streaming on it. It doesn't support it, but Roku does. And, of course, the Google stuff supports Google. It's sad, but these guys at this point are really kind of getting anti-competitive. They're making their hardware incompatible with the other guys' store. Everybody works with Netflix. That's the good news. Everybody. But keep your Apple TV only if you buy stuff on iTunes or you need AirPlay. Roku if you use Amazon. Google's Chromecast if you use... the nice thing about the Chromecast is at $35, it's not so expensive. You could just get it and a Roku and or an Apple TV. And somebody in the chat room saying, Amazon movies could stream through the iPhone and iPad to Apple TV using AirPlay. Yeah, I guess you could do that. Didn't seem quite as good an idea. Be a shame, really be a shame if Amazon said, oh, you have to have a Fire TV to watch Amazon streaming. The minute they do that, I'd have to move elsewhere, I think. Moving on to our next call. It's Bill in Los Angeles. Hi, Bill. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. I saw your review online for Pono, and I just got my player.
Hey, what do you think? This is the Neil Young hardware. You know, Neil Young's iPod, basically.
Yeah.
That plays back master quality, studio master quality recordings.
Yeah, the sound is absolutely fantastic, but there's one thing that is a complete deal breaker for me, and that is that it has no gapless playback. So if you're listening to like a live album or like a Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon, in between every single element, there's like a stutter of silence.
Yeah.
And it's really frustrating.
They've been talking about that in the forum. They say they will fix that with a firmware upgrade.
Okay. So if Neil Young is listening, please. To me, it's fantastic otherwise.
No, I think like gapless playback is very important. The iPod has it. The Pono Music Player on the desktop has it.
Right. I noticed that as well.
But it doesn't do it on the player. And there's no reason. That's just a firmware upgrade. And and they have said that they will do that.
Have you heard any time frame on
I haven't. Okay. I haven't. I would guess they're going to do a firmware upgrade pretty soon, though, because they're now starting to ship out a decent quantity of these. They're not cheap. They're $400. And I bet you they're starting to hear from a number of people. There are a few things missing like that. You're right. And you'd think Neil Young, of all people, who certainly celebrates the art of the album, you know, the idea of a whole album that is a piece, a whole. And I think Dark Side of the Moon is a very good example. You got
to
have
that. That was my exact point to them email to their tech support, that it's like, okay, Neil has been out touting this, and yet we have this, to me, glaring issue. You know?
Yeah, the software is a little immature all around, I think.
Yeah.
We're early adopters, Bob. We got this because we wanted to support the notion of these high-res album tracks. I want to make sure the record industry hears us loud and clear and that they continue to offer them. But you know that there'll be plenty of hardware that will do this.
Yeah, Sony has a player, in fact.
Sony already has a player, the HD Walkman or whatever they call it. There's some phones already have that capability, although I don't know how high quality their digital and analog converters are. I think, and my AV receiver, my Onkyo AV receiver, has an excellent DAC and plays back the high-res stuff very well from a USB drive. So I think more and more, this is just more a kickstart. You know, I think more and more we're going to see more of these. But that's good. You know, I should have mentioned that in the review, because I think for a lot of people that is a deal breaker. So
yeah, I've got it boxed up now, and I don't need to use it until they fix that.
Yeah, so. I agree. Hey, thank you for the call.
Thanks.
Take care. 8888 Ask Leo. That's my phone number. Let's go to Mike in Fountain, Colorado. Hey, Mike.
Oh, Leo.
How are you?
Happy belated birthday. Glad you returned from London safely, and I'm glad you escaped the clutches of that Italian serial killer, Salmonella.
Oh, Sal. Sal paid a visit to my house, I think. You never know, really, you know.
But no, you don't.
But I just feel like it was a little under the weather last week, and I feel like it was food poisoning.
A touch of something.
Something. So what can I do for you?
Okay, I transcode videos on my PC.
Okay.
Recently, now, I'm running an old Core 2 Quad Q8200.
All right.
Intel processor.
Okay.
It's worked fine for 5 years.
Okay.
Suddenly, it gets near the end of the workload after running near 100% the whole time, and the computer shuts down.
Ah!
Now, first thing, I want to clear this with you and see if this is a good thing to do. First thing I'm going to do is I pulled out my Windows 7 disk. I'm going to try and do a Windows 7 repair to see if that clears.
Before I do that, I would check overheating. Sounds like the actual cause of this.
That's what I was thinking, too.
Because this is transcoding, which is converting from one video compression codec to another, is a very CPU intensive. If it's happening at the end, that's when it's at its hottest. And as an older computer, sometimes they get dust, the fans die, or the thermal paste stops working. I would check that first. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It's exactly the symptoms you'd expect for overheating. All right. Don't get overheated. Scott Wilkinson is here. He's here. Don't get overexcited.
Don't get too overheated here.
Take over, my friend. I'm going to eat.
Go eat something. Good idea. Yeah, I got a question. I was just writing to, who was it here with, had a 4K TV question. I can't find it now. You scroll back and forth in this chat room and it's very hard to see stuff, find stuff again once you've done it. Somebody sent me a good question here about Fire TV sticks or Roku stick or Chromecast on an HDMI switcher. That's kind of an interesting idea. Could you plug it in to one of the inputs of the HDMI switcher? I have never considered that before.
Yeah, that would work. I do it. You know, I use my AV receiver. Plug it into that,
and an AV receiver is a switcher. So yeah. Okay. So sure. Why not?
It's an input, an HDMI input.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing to be aware of with some of them is they require power.
True.
The Fire TV and the
Roku. Google Chromecast does certainly.
Yeah.
Chromecast Roku, does. I don't think that. Well,
Roku's
Roku
MHL, so you need an MHL right. port. I doubt it. Maybe switchers come with MHL ports. I don't know.
I don't think so.
I doubt it.
Not that I know of. Didn't Roku more recently come out with one that was? No. It was the other way around. I guess their first one was HDMI. No. I think their first one was MHL.
The first one I had was MHL. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think they might have come out with one since then that was regular HDMI.
They probably thought that MHL would be more ubiquitous than it is.
More common than it is today. Yeah, exactly. Boy, Web4594, can you recommend any HDCP stripper dongles? For HDMI. My new Time Warner Cable DVR analog video out is black with sound only. I'm thinking that HDCP is not satisfied. Analog video, why are you using analog video is the question. It may very well be that it must have an HDMI connection in order to play video at all. In which case, I don't see how you could do it because that HDMI, the HDCP copy protection is happening inside the DVR. So unless I'm not understanding your question completely, so if I'm not. Beatmaster, that's right. Beatmaster and I were talking about the Samsung UE55HU8580 UHD TV, 4K, curved screen, all that stuff. And I mentioned to him that, as everybody knows who's listened to me at all, I don't really like curved screens. And as I said on the segment today, I'm not necessarily sold on 4K as, you know, a resolution that one would want to buy at this point because there is more content. And somebody in the chat room reminded me that I posted a thing on AVS a few days ago, last week, that said that was basically a summary of an article from Digital Trends, another really nice website about technology. And they had pulled together all of the 4K content sources that are currently available. Netflix, of course, YouTube, MGO. I'd have to pull it up to remember exactly what there were. My brain is a FIFO buffer, of course. But if you go to avsforum.com, you'll see it. I think it might still be on the homepage about 4K content sources. And there are more and more coming on board, but they're all, as I said before, they're all still using the same color gamut, range of colors. They're all still using the same dynamic range. It's basically just more pixels. And the only way to take advantage of more pixels is to sit closer to the screen. Almost to the point where, you know, you're getting to the point where your mom used to say, you'll go blind if you sit that close to the TV. I'm not sure that's true. I wouldn't say that it's probably true. But you have to get up really close to that screen in order to see any advantage of simply more pixels. What I'm really waiting for, and I've talked about on the show before, is more dynamic range and more color. greater range of colors. The dynamic range in particular is going to blow you away. No question about it. You can see that from across the room. Doesn't matter what the resolution is, the pixel resolution. If you have greater dynamic range in the content and on the TV, those two conditions both must be met. And if you do, then the picture is astonishing. It's like, oh my God, it's amazing. So that's what I'm waiting for. And Beatmaster or somebody here in the chat room, I forget exactly who it was, said, you know, they're, I've lost it again. You know, is the 4K worth it? And I said, no, wait. Dr. Mom is asking, is there a website where I can compare TVs by size? I've got a 40-inch wide cabinet, and I want to put the biggest, best quality TV in it. Good question. You know, one of my favorite TV review websites is called RTINGS, RTINGS.com. And as I recall, they do categorize their TVs by size, and they review a lot of TVs, and the reviews seem to be pretty good. Pretty reliable. So I would recommend checking that out, Dr. Mom. David Bix asks if either Leo or I have tried the Pono competitors, Sony, Fio, F-I-I-O. I have not. I do know my colleague Mark Kenninger has the Sony. And
yeah,
I know
tried
he really
the
likes
Sony.
It.
Sony's good.
Have you?
Yeah.
Yeah, he really likes it.
I haven't done a comparison with the Pono. And then Fio is great. I mean, I use a lot of Fio stuff. They're good.
Yeah, okay.
They use high-quality DACs.
Yeah, well, that's the key, isn't it?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. Now, the HTC M8.
I'm not sure I'd recommend that. That's the Harman Kardon edition. Has supposedly high-res playback. But you can't... I doubt they put a good DAC in that. But I don't know.
Yeah. Himtez asks, was the UHD TV at Walmart a good deal or a pass? I would probably say a pass. As Leo pointed out, you know, there was a 4K UHD TV for $900 somewhere and turned out to be pretty lousy. I would guess that might be the case there as well.
Thank you, Scott.
My pleasure.
See ya.
Thanks, Leo.
Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about computers and the internet and home theater and MP3 players and all that jazz. Yep. For a while, I took MP3 players off the list, but now that the Pono and other high-res music players are popular, I think we're going to have to put it back on the list. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number if you have a question, a comment, a suggestion if you'd like to talk high tech. You can also visit our website, techguylabs.com. Great place to go to see everything I've talked about. There's links there. We have people taking notes as we go. We'll put audio and video from the show up there. And we divide it up by show, by hour, by question. So it's very easy to go right to the part you want. You can also leave your comments if you've got an idea you'd like to share. TechGuyLabs.com. That's all you really need to remember. Everything's there, and it's free. No sign-up required. This is a little scary. Canadian High Court has ruled that police officers do not need a warrant in Canada to search your cell phone. Supreme Court of Canada ruled by a 4-3 decision. If it's a lawful arrest and there's a valid reason for the search, that seems like a open to interpretation, the search must be limited to the suspected crime, and police must keep detailed records of the search. In some ways, they say this is an improvement, because before this decision, there was no limitation at all. Something to be aware of. I don't know what the state of the law is in the U.S. It's in flux. But I think the most recent U.S. Supreme Court decision said there were some limits on what police could do with your cell phone. One thing to keep in mind, you know, the reason this is important is here in California, for instance, a CHP officer got fired and disciplined because he and apparently many of his colleagues were, during routine traffic stops, taking the driver's cell phone and looking for sexy pictures on it. And if they found them, they were sending them off to their friends. They were using the person's cell phone to do it.
Here's a good picture. Let me just text this over.
That's how they got caught. First of all, stupid. Second of all, completely inappropriate. But most importantly, a reminder that that is private stuff. And just because you've been pulled over or even arrested doesn't mean they have access to it. There are some interesting court cases, though, about fingerprint readers versus PIN numbers. Lots of court cases have upheld the notion that you have the right not, you know, the Fifth Amendment says you have the right not to incriminate yourself. And so that particularly means you can't testify against yourself or can't be compelled to testify against yourself. And in the past, revealing a password has been deemed to be that, testifying against yourself, giving the police information that incriminates you. But in several court cases, the court has ruled that taking someone's blood or a DNA sample from their hair is not self-incrimination. And now more recent court cases seem to say that compelling you to touch your finger to the fingerprint reader to unlock your phone is legal. But they can't compel you to enter a PIN code. What? Okay. So, if you're doing what seems to be like on an iPhone, the most secure way to lock your phone, which is using the fingerprint reader, in fact, law enforcement can say, put your finger on there, and you can't stop them. On the other hand, they can't say, what's your PIN code? You can say, I have the right not to incriminate myself. I plead the Fifth. Very interesting. Very interesting. And if you're in Canada, forget about it. They have the right to say, can I look at your phone? And you don't have the right to say no. Unbelievable. It seems like we're giving up all semblance of privacy here. And it's because technology has given, it's ironic, isn't it? It's given law enforcement unprecedented ability to spy on us. And at the same time, when companies like Google and Apple say, okay, well, in that case, we're going to encrypt the data on our phones, then the head of the FBI says, you can't do that. We have the right to look at that stuff. Ask Leo. That's the phone number if you want to talk about that. Let's see, what else is in the news? I'm just going to give you a couple of things we can talk about, then I'll go back to the phones. Always somebody has a question about technology, but I just, you know, I'd like to... Well, there's an interesting new thing on YouTube. It's only on a couple of channels right now, but I think they're going to do it more globally. You can create an animated GIF. You know what that is? From a YouTube channel. Yeah. So you go to... right now, it's only on... Rhett and Link's Good Mythical Morning channel or the Idea channel. But when you click the share button, you'll have the option to make a captioned 6-second animated GIF. So you'll actually be able to add a caption to it and then make a 6-second animated GIF. You get to pick where the GIF starts. I think that's kind of cool. I like that. Those of you... who prefer that I say GIF, I'll say that. An animated GIF, you choose. Sony is fighting. This is good. We talked about the Sony hack last hour. And, you know, the Sony Pictures Entertainment was hacked. Almost everything that was on their hard drives on any computer and any server in the entire building has been released to the public. So what is Sony doing? They're trying to disrupt the downloads of stolen files using hundreds of computers in Asia to execute a denial of service attack on sites where the data is available. Is that legal? Are you allowed to do that? They have stuff we don't want you to see, so we're going to bring their site down. I don't think that's legal. They've also gone to law enforcement, and at least one person's been arrested for downloading the data. I just wanted to see what Angelina Jolie and said about no, that you're going to jail. What? This is just crazy. This is just crazy. 8888, Ask Leo. Sharon's on the line from San Marco, California. Hi, Sharon. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Thanks very much for answering my question,
well, thanks for calling. I hope I can.
So I have a pretty, I guess, non-techie question. I am going to upgrade from an iPhone 4.
Okay.
Which is pretty old, I know. But I don't use my phone for anything but just basic, you know, I don't use it for work. I just use it for texting and making phone calls or checking my email.
Mm-hmm.
So I see that the 5 and the 6 now are pretty affordable.
Yeah, the 5 is a 4-inch screen. Yours is a 3.5-inch screen, so the 5 is bigger.
Right, okay. And my son has the 5. And okay.
So you've seen how big that is.
I have. And you know, I think I can maybe even get the 5 as an upgrade for possibly even for free at this point. But I've seen them as low as $49 and I think $129 for the 6.
That's right.
So with that, you know, small difference in price.
And it is small, remember, because you're going to pay the rest of it over the 2-year contract. You're required to have a 2-year contract either way.
Exactly. And I'm with Verizon and have been for many years.
So they build that into the price of the contract.
Okay. So with regards to, you know, just apples to apples, what are your thoughts between the 5 and the 6? And should I, is it kind of a no-brainer? Should I go 6 or?
I think you'd like the 6. 6 is bigger.
Okay.
Better looking and more modern. Plus, the fingerprint reader makes a big difference. Okay. I think for the $70, I would go with a 6, absolutely. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Actually, it's the other way around. The guy who created the GIF format says it should be GIF. So, you can't win. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, Ask Leo, the phone number. The advantage of getting an older iPhone, the 5 or the, I think they're even still selling 4S's. And certainly the 5S, it's cheap. Up front, it's cheap. Although, as I said, I think in the long run, you end up paying because it's the cost of the phone is really spread out over 2 years, and that's thousands. But if you know, the upfront cost is an issue, I could see why that you may pay attention to that. If possible, though, I'd always get the latest version just because it's going to last you longer. Apple Pay only works with a 5S or better. That's because you need the fingerprint reader. So the 5 is, I would not get the 5 at this point. A 5S I'd consider, I'd get a 6. I think you'll like the 6. The 6 is a beautiful phone. $70 more, I think you should get the newest. If it were $150, then I might pause, think about it. But what will happen is that in a couple of years, you won't be able to upgrade that 6 and be nice to get 2 or 3 years out of it, wouldn't it? Wouldn't it? Edward in Fullerton, California, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Edward.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going great. How are you?
Hey, pretty good, Leo. Hey, I got a question about Apple TV. I know you touched on it just a little bit ago, but I was out of the room. The Apple TV, I wanted to get it for a couple of years. I got 2 iPads, iPhones, all that. But I wanted to find out, I don't really see too much pushing by Apple right now about Apple TV. And knowing my luck, I'm going to go out and get it for Christmas. And then all of a sudden they're going to come out like in January and go, oh my gosh, you know, Apple TV, the new and improved Apple TV, blah, blah, blah. You know, it can control the weather. It can control the refrigerator temperature. And then I'm going to be out. And I'm going to be crying.
Well, it is only $99.
Oh, I know.
It's not like you're hawking your car to buy this thing.
Yeah.
I do think, although it's a pure guess because, you know, Apple doesn't pre-announce, But I do think this is 2015 will be the year for a new Apple TV. And I think good. It is likely that a new Apple TV will have some home automation features. Apple has already made noises that they want to do that. I think the most interesting thing a new Apple TV could have, and there's again, this is rank speculation. I have no right to say this.
Mm-hmm.
But I think having an app store in going forward for Apple TV will be very important. You see they're running into this problem already. They just did an update to their existing Apple TV last mm-hmm. week that added more channels. And the way Apple TV works, only Apple can add a channel, and it's all added by default. So if you have an Apple TV, the grid of icons now goes on and on and on, and it's full of a lot of stuff you don't want. There are ways using parental controls to disable them, but I don't think most people know that. And so it's getting cumbersome. So either they have to do a new interface, which they could do in a firmware upgrade, or more likely they'll do what Roku has done. Roku, there are literally thousands of channels available for Roku. And the way it works, you go into the channel store and pick the ones you want to see on the main screen. Uh-huh. So you totally control it, and you only have the five you really care about. And they can be oddball things. Apple's not as loosey-goosey as anybody else, certainly not as loosey-goosey as Roku. So I don't expect the app store to be wide open. But I'd like to see that. For instance, I have a podcast network that is available on Roku. You can get an app on Roku in the channel store, and that can be part of your Roku lineup. I can't do that on Apple because you have to partner with Apple to do that.
Yeah.
And Apple has to, you know, you can beg them and plead with them, but they really only want the big guys, the Wall Street Journals of the world, to do it.
Yeah.
So it leaves me out and many of my brethren with IPTV stations. As we get big, as IP, the idea of the internet bringing you your television is obviously starting to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And as we get closer and closer to that, Apple's opportunity with Apple TV gets bigger because it's now an IPTV device. But they have to modify it to make it work that way. And I think this is the year they're going to do it.
Okay. Well, I probably am still going to get the, you know, spend the $100.
I think,
it,
you know, if something much better comes out in 6 months, at least you have the Apple TV now. The other thing, and I didn't really mention this, but one of the things that makes the Apple TV so good is Apple serves the content directly from its own servers, so when you get Netflix, for instance, on Apple TV, it's the best possible experience because Apple gets the Netflix content and caches it and then serves it to you. So you don't ever have these issues with your internet service provider blocking it or slowing it down.
Good call.
So it is easily the best way to watch Netflix in a variety, and any channel that's on Apple TV is going to look good. Apple makes sure of it.
Yeah.
So that's a real advantage to it, frankly.
Well, and I think I'm going to check out Roku too. I mean, that sounds like I like the concierge service they have there. I wish my cable
$99. I have them all.
Yeah,
I have. It's ridiculous. One TV will have Apple TV, Roku, Chromecast, Fire TV, Xbox One because it has its stuff. And of course, the TV itself has its own Netflix. I could get Netflix six different ways, but I always go to the Apple TV when I want to watch Netflix.
Yeah. I think you're pretty much a technological hoarder there. Can you make it to the kitchen without stepping on a little?
You know what? Actually, is at the point now where something new comes out, and I go, no, I don't want. I know, I don't want to add it. No,
That's great.
No more. Stop.
Well, I appreciate the help.
Yeah, I think you'll love the Apple TV. It's worth getting now. You don't have anything else connected?
No.
Yeah.
I have a Blu-ray.
So those are terrible.
Hulu and all that.
Yeah, the Blu-ray and television interfaces generally are not very good.
Yeah.
You get an Apple TV or Roku and you'll go, oh, nice. What have I been missing?
Excellent.
Good holiday gift, too. Hey, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. It's nice to clarify that because I think a lot of people – and by the way, I am totally speculating and I'm often wrong about Apple. More often than not, they're kind of an unpredictable company. But the rumor has been for a while that the new Apple TV would be coming out sometime in 2015. Now, that could be November 2015. So get it now. If you really want it, I would say get it now. Ann in Orange County, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Ann.
Hello. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Great. I have a problem ongoing with my computer. Now, I'm a writer. I've been using a computer since, I think, 81. I loved Multimate.
Ah, you have been using that's a long time. Multimate, wasn't Multimate based on the Wang word processor? I think it was.
Yeah. It was, and that's why writers loved it.
Yeah, because you already knew the Wang keystrokes.
Correct. And it was fast. You didn't have to take your hand off of the keyboard. Right. It was keyboard driven, so it was very effective and practical. For a writer, having to manipulate the mouse is very distracting, I think.
I think so too. You want to keep your hands typing.
Here's my problem. My brain disks are full. I have no space for anything new, and nor do I want anything new. Right now, I've been having a problem with my computer and the email, which I use to send manuscripts and so on. So my husband got me a new tower from a local people. I don't know who they are or what they are. And
hang on, Ann. We have to take a break. Network rules. But if you hang on, we can complete this right after the break, okay?
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Ann. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. My brain disks are full. I like that. I could see where Ann's going on this. Which is, what's the best Windows word processor for writers? We're going to find out who she is, what kind of novels she writes. First, though, let's talk about shaving. I'm going to help you with your holiday gift. You could buy 20 of these, and you would then give them to all the men in your life. You see, you're already getting excited, aren't you, Heather? Because you know I'm going to talk about Harry's.
It smells so good.
It smells so good, and so will he when he shaves with Harry's. HARRYS.com. Harry's is a place that is, this company is so cool, they've decided they're going to make shaving a better experience for all mankind. In fact, Harry's went out and they bought the factory, which is pretty awesome. The guys who started Harry's wanted to make the best blades at a lower cost. You know, by selling direct, you eliminate the retailer, you can cut the price. And it really is ridiculous now what you're paying for a razor blade. $4 for a razor blade is not okay. So Harry's figured out a way to sell it direct. But they also want to make sure that they even made the experience better. So they actually bought the factory in Germany. The one factory that really knows how to make these. They actually own their own blade factory. So they can make the best possible blades. You can read about it on the website. This company, this factory has been around since 1920. They employ 400 German engineers, designers, craftsmen, and production workers and produce millions of precision blades a year. And, of course, Harry's gets the cream of the crop. If you've been shaving with those cheap disposable blades, you're just not doing your face a favor. Now, that's true also of your loved ones. And there's some special deals right now at Harry's.com for you to pick up one of these great kits. This is a special new one with the blue. This is Winston with the blue steel. I like it. Or blue aluminum handle. All the kits come with three blades, the handle, and the amazing Harry's cream. You can either get the foam or the cream in a bottle, which is just fabulous. That's part of the Harry's experience. I shave every day with Harry's. I never cut myself ever again. You won't either. If you go to HARRYS.com, use the offer code TechGuyHoliday. And you could save $5 off the limited edition Harry's Winter Winston set. That's what I was just looking at. The Winston set. $30. Sleek razor handle. You have a choice of charcoal, gray, or blue. Johnny Jett's interested in this because he's a shaver. Now, again, thank God. The Winter Winston set in blue or charcoal. As usual, comes with the best blades, three of them. Foaming shave gel. And then you can subscribe to Harry's and get blades every month. I love the price. They cost half as much as the blades in the store. And by the way, they do have a new aftershave moisturizer that is so nice and does smell so good. Harry's razors, the best razors in the world. And as a holiday offer, Harry's gifting all of our fans $5 off the limited edition winter set. Even if you're already a Harry's member, by the way, this is not just for new folks. If you're already a Harry's subscriber, which I am, you still can get $5 off. You'll get the razor, three quality blades, a tube of foaming shave gel or shave cream, and free shipping. $25, the ultimate gift for the man in your life. Or the men in your life. HARRYS.com. The offer code is Tech Guy Holiday. Take it, use it in good health, you little shaver, you. Oh, man, we're going to get back to you and help you solve your writing woes. But first, we have to say hi to Johnny Jet, world traveler, and our guru.
How you doing?
Hey, Johnny, where are you today?
I'm actually in Los Angeles. I'm back home.
Way, that's nice. And it looks like the mustache is gone and then come again. I don't understand what's going on here.
I got lazy. I didn't shave, but I got my stitches out of my lip.
Yeah, you look good. You look good.
Which is so much better.
Yeah.
And I actually have a travel product related. I got the nicest gift in the mail yesterday, and it was from a longtime subscriber of my newsletter. And they wrote, you know, I read about your squamous cell carcinoma, which I had this cancer on my lip, and that we want to send you one of our Tilly hats.
I have a Tilly hat. I love my Tilly.
I love Tilly, too.
Lisa keeps stealing my Tilly hat.
And so he said, you know, he just wrote the nicest thing. He says, this hat has UPF 50+. And he goes, it's good enough for the Mayo Clinic to sell it. It should be good enough to cover your head.
Yeah, so, no, those are good traveler's hats. They even have a little pouch inside them.
They do. That's where I put my wallet and my money.
Yeah.
For the people on the
See
podcast.
That? Isn't that awesome? Little protective pouch. Which Tilly did they send you?
It's the Tilly Hat Style LTM6. But the guy's
awesome.
Looks
exactly like the one I have. I love my Tilly. This is your made in Canada. It's like old school, really old school, and they're great. You can crumple them up. You can wash them. They have on the website, they have the story of a guy whose Tilly hat was eaten by an elephant. Yeah. He recovered it after the fact. I don't want to explain how, but use your imagination. Washed it, and it's good as new.
You really are a Tilly fan.
I am a Tilly fan.
Well, I am too, but it just I couldn't believe it. Was the vice president of sales and marketing read my newsletter, and he sent it to me. It's brilliant marketing, but, you know.
They're not paying for the advertising here, folks. We both wear Tilly hats, which is
exactly.
So funny. Yeah. They're old-fashioned. They feel like it's an old-fashioned. But they're like canvas, and they have ventilation. They're good for, like, the tropics.
When I ever went to Africa or South Pacific, I always would bring it because of the vents. But you can get the other ones, too. I actually have a winter hat that I bought on my own.
Oh, so you knew about them beforehand?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
I've been a fan.
Yeah, you and I both. Something about travelers. I think when we run into each other at airports and whatever, we exchange tips because we understand. We're sympathetic to the troubles of travelers. And so we know about our Scotty vests and our Tilly hats and our Briggs and Riley bags. Everybody kind of shares this information. And there's kind of this consensus about what's the best roller bag, what's the best hat, what's the best. And it's interesting because you and I hadn't talked ahead of time, but I agree 100%.
And I have a Briggs and Riley and I have a Scotty vest.
Yeah, I know.
But so I got a good.
So Tilly, by the way, is TILLEY.com. I don't know if it's too late to get one for Hanukkah or Christmas, but they would be a good gift, I think.
For sure.
Yeah. Lisa steals mine. We're going to order her one because she keeps taking mine.
Well, I don't think Natalie likes mine, actually, but I like it. So, but I got a travel tip for you. So, you know, if you're a family of four or however many is in your family and you're doing a search online, you know, if you go in and put four airfares down, you're going to get, and let's just say the airline loaded, you know, just two fares, bargain fares are left in the airline system. All four are going to price out at the highest price. So what I tell people to do is to first search your fare for one person and then do it for four, and it should multiply what the first fare
you
was.
Mean if you if you shop for four, they may actually quote you a higher price?
Well, that's because there might only be a certain amount of bargain fares in there left.
Ah.
So that's why you always search one person first. Find out what that fare is, and then go and search however many people you're searching, and then find out if it multiplies to that number. If it doesn't, then I would start going, you know, two at a time or three at a time and find out. And then buy the cheaper fares first.
Oh,
and
I see.
That way you'll save some money.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? I'm not sure if I'm explaining it correctly.
It does make sense because they won't necessarily, if you go four at once, quote you the three lowest rates and then one high rate. They might quote you four high rates.
Exactly.
Got it.
So it all depends on the whatever, you know, website you're using to search and stuff like
That's
that.
That's a good travel tip.
So, yep, I've been using that, and I remember I've never mentioned it here. So
people wonder why we have a travel guy on a technology show. Well, because the airlines are now using technology for pricing so effectively that we have to start getting smart about how we use their sites.
For sure.
Because, you sit on a plane and no two people will have paid the same price for that ticket. You want to be one of the people that's paid the lowest possible price for that ticket.
Exactly. And a lot of times, by the way, the airlines will sometimes, if you search the same site multiple times, they could drop a cookie in there and they could, they know that you're coming back and they'll can quote you a higher price.
Oh, that's mean.
So what I do is...
Do they do that?
Some do. So what I do is I change browsers or I'll clear my cookies.
That's a great tip.
But I usually change the browser.
Most people have a couple of browsers, maybe Chrome and Internet Explorer or Safari and Firefox. Use a different browser because its cookies are different.
And it all depends on the airline or even the website, but it doesn't happen all the time, but it can happen. And it's happened to me multiple times. So, you gotta be wise with these guys. It can be tricky.
By the way, your app tip honk, I installed that. I haven't used it yet, but I feel I'm putting on everybody's phone. I love that. I install all your apps, Johnny.
Do you really?
Oh, yeah.
Well, you must have a lot in your phone right now.
You're good. You can get Johnny's suggestions, by the way, on his website, johnnyjet.com. He also tweets like crazy.
Like a madman.
Like a madman, at Johnny Jet on the Twitter.
And I have a deals newsletter. That's
on the website. And that's free, right?
Of course. Yeah. So actually, I should send one out today. I got to go and find some good airfare deals. I'll do that right now.
Awesome. All right, JJ. Anything else?
All right. No, I was in D.C. Last time I spoke to you, I was in D.C. and I went to go to the White House for this travel.
Oh, you were at the White House with all the top travel writers in the world. How was that?
Guess what? I got food poisoning.
At the White House?
The night before.
Oh, I was going to say.
So I ended up not making the summit.
You were sick? You didn't get to go?
I sucked it up literally to go for the White House tour. Oh. So I saw the Christmas decorations, but I was like, I cannot sit into a 3-hour meeting.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
So I missed all the big guys, but they had a live webcast, so I watched some of that.
All right. There you go. Johnny, he is one of the top travel writers in the world when he's not laid low by food poisoning.
And you can find out. Only my third time in my life getting food poisoning, by the way.
It's bad. It's bad. It's funny. I had it this week, too, or last week.
Did you really?
Yeah.
I eat out 300-plus times
a
year.
That's why, by the way. If you're at home, you can wash your hands, you're clean, you clean the cutting board, you clean the knife. You know what to do to stay clean, not cross-contaminate your food. We all know, to be clean. But the problem is you eat out, you don't know. And I think that's one of the reasons that we're all getting more. We're eating out more.
But what kills me is it's usually either in 5-star hotels or the top restaurants.
Really?
Yep. So when I go to Singapore and eat at, on the... Actually, I think
you don't eat at the street. You don't eat the street food, do you?
I do. I won't in India, but like in Singapore, the street food in Singapore is better and safer than any 5-star restaurant or hotel in America.
The CDC estimates that 1 in 6 Americans, 48 million people, get food poisoning every year. Of those, 128,000 are hospitalized. 3,000 die of food poisoning every year.
Well, I'm glad I didn't read that on Tuesday.
It is far more common than one would think. And that's another travel tip. Really, you think the street food?
Well, in Singapore, it's highly regulated.
Okay.
And when I go to these hawker stands, I look for the one with the longest line.
Ah.
Because then the food's always turned over.
That's a
over.
Good tip.
It has a very good
it'll be fresher too.
Reputation. Yeah. Also, if you're in the airport, I always look for flight attendants and pilots in line for the food because they know where it's the best and they know where it's the cheapest.
JohnnyJet.com. Follow him on the Twitter. Thank you, Johnny. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Oh. I'm sorry to hear that, Johnny.
Oh, I was too. I was so bummed because I was so looking forward to it. But
I bet.
And that going stinks. Into the White House, by the way, they make you wait. At least I had to wait an hour inside or outside in the freezing cold rain to get into the White House. And I'm like, I can't. If I knew it was going to be that long, I would have stayed.
You're lucky you got in. They don't let normal people go in anymore. I've been on the White House tour, but that was a long time ago. They stopped after 9/11. They don't let anybody
in. Actually, the public was in. I saw a public.
Really? They have public tours?
You do. You have to sign up way in advance. You need to give them your social security number, your passport number. They do all kinds of background checks.
Okay.
And there they had two security checks, which took forever.
Yeah.
One of the security guys was such a jerk. I was like, yeah.
What's wrong with your lip?
You thought the TSA was bad.
Do you have a gun sewn in your lip?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know they were still good. I'm glad they're still doing tours, but it's not like you could go in there and have some cheese with the president olden days.
No. We saw his motorcade. I could see him, you know, through the windows. I could see the motorcade getting ready for him to come out the door of the West Wing. We were in the East Wing.
Wow.
So, but it's still an amazing experience. My first time in the White House. And I just wish I had a better stomach.
Andrew Jackson had a big block of cheese in the White House, and people would come and invited. The whole town could come in and just have some cheese and shake the president's hand. I'm not kidding.
I'm not kidding. I'd rather be living in this time.
I know. 8888 Ask Leo. I feel bad. I guess we got sidetracked and did the travel thing. And then Ann, our writer, who wanted some help getting a perfect writing program for her new Windows machine. I presume that's what she wanted. We didn't get to it, but we lost her call. So, I don't know these days. I know many, many writers, and they all agree that you want the least distracting experience. You don't want a lot of menus and toolbars. You want a clean screen. And yes, you don't want to take your hands off the keyboard. You just want to write. And I don't know what I'd be curious to know. There are some programs on the Mac I know of that are like Write Room, WRITE Room, that are designed for writing on the Mac, distraction-free writing. But I don't know on Windows what the best writing program would be. It's not Word. Although, ironically, many publishers expect the manuscript in Microsoft Word format. But that's fine. You can write it in a text editor and then import it into Word. Anybody in the chat room has a suggestion? Scooter X says he likes or has heard that Draftin, draftin.com, is a good choice for a Windows. Write better with Draft. Oh, it's called Draft. Write better with Draft. Easy version control and collaboration. See, that's kind of an interesting idea. I've written books with co-authors. If you do that, then having tools that allow you to write and then work with a co-author and have them write and modify, that would be awesome. Looks like Draft is online. I'll have to try it. Draftin. SublimeText.com has a distraction-free mode. But it seems to be some consensus that Draft is the way to write on Windows. So you know what? I'm going to sign up, and I'm going to try it, and I'll let you know. It's not surprising that in this, what's changed in this day and age is that with Microsoft, when they were trying to beat WordPerfect and Multimate and all the other word processors. In the early days of computing, there were literally a dozen different word processors. And the way they competed was by adding features. You remember this? So they did, because the magazines, PC Magazine and all the other magazines, would have tables with check marks next to the features. And it's our fault, because we would look at the table and go, well, that's got the most check marks. That's the one I'm going to buy. And as a result, you got these bloated, big programs. It didn't do anything well. They had to have a lot of controls and toolbars and menus just so you could figure out what to do. And nobody used most of those features, but it had them all. And I think it makes sense now as we get back to the earliest days of computing where the idea was have a program do one thing but do it well. Simple. And then have some sort of facility for multiple programs to work together. That was the original. In the earliest days of Unix, that was how things were written. You wrote a tool that did one thing well. I'm not surprised that we might be getting back to this in the app era. So if you've got a suggestion for a great word processor for Ann Arbor, I'd love to hear from it. From you. Jerry coming up in Cary, North Carolina. He ran his Windows updates, and now you can't connect to Wi-Fi. You're darned if you do, you're darned if you don't, right? Jerry and Cary, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Jerry.
Hi, Leo. It wasn't Windows update. It was the HT Support Assistant suggested some updates.
HP did.
HP is Support Assistant.
Yeah. A lot of the OEMs, the third-party manufacturers like HP, put special updaters on there in addition to Windows Update.
Right.
And what did it update? Do you know?
Okay, looking at the log, two possible culprits here. Obviously, one is the Realtek 802.1 BGN wireless LAN driver.
Yeah.
And another would be maybe the BIOS update.
Yeah, I would start with the first because that is your Wi-Fi driver. And you said you're not getting Wi-Fi anymore?
Connecting with wired Ethernet. I uninstalled the driver, went to HP and downloaded the driver, reinstalled, and it's still not working.
Do you see in the system tray, you know, those little bars that show you Wi-Fi? Are they just
the bars?
Red X?
When I disconnect the wire, Ethernet, if I have the bars with how strong the signal is, it's got a red X again.
Yeah. Yeah, red X. That means no Wi-Fi. And you've gone through the settings to make sure those didn't get damaged or corrupted, that you're in infrastructure mode, not ad hoc mode, all of that. Just go through the settings. Make sure that the password's correct. It may have forgotten all of that. I can't even
get to where it's looking for.
Oh, you can't open the Wi-Fi manager?
Sharing. I've got network connections.
Right-click on the Wi-Fi, that red X, the Wi-Fi bars, and you can select properties there, and you should be able to get the settings and see what's going on. You can roll back the old drivers, and that might be the thing to do. Windows does give you that capability.
When I go to the hardware and device manager and go to the drivers, rollback is grayed out. It's not.
Oh, I think this is a call to HP. This is a nightmare. Thank you, HP.
Yeah, because if I go to network connections, it shows Wi-Fi disabled.
Oh.
If I go to enable this network, it won't enable it. It'll say enabling, and then it says still disabled.
BIOS and just check the maybe you have done that. Go into the BIOS setup and make sure Wi-Fi wasn't disabled there. And is it a laptop or a desktop?
It's a laptop.
Yeah, you know, many laptops, this could be it. Many laptops have a key that will turn off Wi-Fi or disable it. That'll turn off the radio, and that's for airplane mode. Yeah, I would just check that. And make sure you didn't actually turn off the Wi-Fi, which it sounds like it is, to be honest. So I'm not sure if you have a physical Wi-Fi button or if it's a function key. It might be a switch, but I would check that. I'm willing to bet that's what it is. 8888 Ask Leo. We got to take a break for news at the top of the hour. I will be back another hour to come. Don't forget the website, techguylabs.com. Your suggestions, your comments, always welcome there. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. And you're more than welcome. I know many of you have thoughts about the Wi-Fi issue, to go to the website and put your comments in there. Paul does not use Notepad, actually. Mary Jo uses Notepad. Paul uses Word. Go to DeVry, get a degree, then try to fix the computer, says Microstan. How many of you like to cook or have a fantasy maybe that you are a great chef, but you haven't had the time to plan the menu or shop? Or I have an idea. This is something so cool. A lot of people I know now are using Blue Apron. The name Blue Apron comes from the famous French cooking school Cordon Bleu, where the apprentice chefs wore blue aprons. The chefs wore white aprons. That was a signal that they were learning how to cook. Blue Apron is such a great solution. They will send you everything you need to make a gourmet meal. All the foodstuffs, and I'm talking fresh too, even fresh salmon or pork, and of course all of the ingredients, including all the spices. They even sent me salt, so that you don't have to do the shopping. You just get the recipe, and the recipes come on these beautiful full-size cards, coated stock, so you could save them, and I would. And it gives you, in a way, some kind of encouragement, right? Because you've made it once, and you've had all the ingredients prepared ready for you to go, and you've made it once. So now the next time you go, oh, I can do that. Incredible. For $9.99 a person, $9.99 per person per meal, Blue Apron sends you a refrigerated box, by the way, completely recyclable, with the right high-quality ingredients in exactly the right proportions, plus the simple step-by-step recipe instructions. They're very well written, and many of them by celebrity chefs. So it's fun. You're making some really interesting dishes. All the ingredients come from local farms, so you're getting produce that's not only in season, but it's at the peak of its freshness. Meals are 500 to 700 calories per serving. So they're very healthful, very delicious. Cooking takes half an hour. Shipping's free. And you'll never get the same item twice because they're always updating the menu. I want you to visit right now, blueapron.com/twit. You can make meals like flat iron steaks with beet walnut and freca salad and gorgonzola, or Indian lentil stew with sunchokes. It's incredible. You're going to get two meals free if you go to blueapron.com/twit. Just click the redeem offer button. Two meals free. You know why? Because once you try it, you're going to say, I love Blue Apron. blueapron.com/twit. They have a two-person plan, and if you're cooking for a family plan too. Gnocchi with sausage and Savoy cabbage. Stewed chicken with potato latkes and creme fraiche. Oh, my God. Macadamia crusted cod with black rice, golden beet and avocado salad. Delicata squash and barley soup. By the way, their soups are amazing. Fresh chestnut pasta with Brussels sprouts, ghee, and poppy seeds. They even have a cookbook. But, you know, as you use Blue Apron, you're building your own cookbook. Get two meals free. blueapron.com/twit. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about computers, the internet, home theater, MP3 players, digital photography, all that jazz. 8888 Ask Leo is the number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. You can also reach us via Skype if you're outside those countries. So we were talking with Ann before in the last hour about word processors. She's a writer. She wants a simple, clean word processor for her computer. And Scooter X in our chat room suggested Draft, which is, as far as I can tell, free web-based. Now, that's kind of neat because you don't have to have a big, fancy Windows machine. You could use a Chromebook, for instance, to use Draft. It's a pretty sweet-looking word processor. The website is DraftIn, DraftIn.com. It allows collaboration, so multiple authors can work on a single document. It supports versioning, so if you made some changes and decide you want to go back to an earlier version, you can. And it supports something called Markdown for formatting, so it has a very simple formatting capability. It also supports cloud storage, and I think that's one of the most interesting things about Draft is, and by the way, Microsoft's doing this with Office now. Apple does it with iWork. Instead of storing a file on your computer, as we are used to doing with a word processor, you could store it in a cloud storage place. And Draft supports Dropbox, Google Drive, Evernote, and Box. Plus, you could have your own FTP or file server if you were a little more sophisticated. And you can store it locally. But the advantage of doing it on a cloud is that then you can open and edit your program or your document from any computer with a browser. I like this. That's pretty sweet. And it is absolutely a very clean interface, which a lot of writers want. You know, keyboard only. You can just really click and edit and work. And, boy, I think that's impressive. Very simple. Draft. Including version control, which is pretty sweet. And a Chrome plugin. So it looks just like an app if you're using a Chrome on an operating system that supports that. Nice recommendation. Thank you, Scooter X. Mike is on the line from Pomona, California. He's our next caller. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm good. Listen, I'm an independent movie producer. I produce two films, and I want to put on a YouTube, and YouTube doing like movie streaming.
Yeah.
And I just want to know if I put it there, nobody going to steal my movie and put it all the site?
Well, I got to tell you, as soon as you put anything online, there's always the risk that somebody might borrow it or steal it, reuse it. YouTube does a pretty good job of preventing casual users from downloading a movie, but it isn't hard. It's not impossible to figure out how to download files from YouTube. There are a number of ways to do that. Once they have that file, absolutely they could distribute it. When you put something online, anything online, that risk is kind of there. But to me, the rewards outweigh the risk because it is the best place to publicize something. It's true, if you never print a novel, if you never publish it, no one can ever steal it from you, but then no one can ever read it either. So there, you can get frozen by this fear of getting ripped off. I wouldn't worry about it. It's, I presume the movie has, you know, your name in it and so forth, right?
Yeah.
Now, you can put it on YouTube in a private mode. We do this all the time for stuff we don't want publicly visible and share it that way. So if it's you're sharing it with a limited number of people, just put it in private mode. And then you'll have to send the link to those people.
Okay. And another thing is publicity on it. YouTube, you can buy and I can put my trailer and they can show on their movie. That's also, they have those features or no?
You mean like an advertisement?
Yes.
Yeah, you can buy ads. Absolutely. Yeah, a lot of people do that. Buy ads. A lot of YouTube channels buy ads on other YouTube channels to promote their own content. And YouTube certainly facilitates that. I don't know how effective it is, but I don't think it's too expensive. So in that case, you wouldn't make it private. You'd have to make it public or you wouldn't get people seeing it. But YouTube does at least allow you to do a private. If you said, I want to show this to a few investors, it might be the easiest way to put it. It would be put it on YouTube and then give investors that link. Again, it's not a guarantee of safety because anything that's online is, you know, kind of semi-public, even if it's in a private place on YouTube. It's no guarantee somebody wouldn't discover it. But I think it's worth it. I think it's worth it, frankly. Good luck with the film. Pete in Brooklyn, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Pete.
Hi, Leo. I just want to say thank you again for helping me calibrate my TV, you and Scott.
Did it look good? Does it look better?
Yeah, it's actually pretty good. It's good.
You got the disc? You got a disc? What did you do?
I actually used a THX tune-up.
Oh, good.
And airplayed it to the Apple TV.
Great.
Yeah, it was pretty good. I was quite interested in how... it worked.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Instead of going out and buying a disc, this THX tune-up is an app for iOS, yes?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Well, what can I do for you this time?
I got two quick ones, Leo. One, I have the Nexus 6 on Verizon, and I'm trying to root it. But when I go through the steps, I've seen some videos online. For some reason, the phone won't unlock.
Be careful. it may be that Verizon has done something extra to protect the Nexus 6. The Nexus 6, and I have the unlocked version, the Nexus 6 is Google's kind of reference platform for Android. So it's the purest Android. It doesn't have any customizations. But Google did something a little different with this Nexus. They gave it to the carriers, Verizon, AT&T, T-Mobile, Sprint, and U.S. Cellular. And unfortunately, what the carriers do, especially Verizon, is they put their own stuff on there. They change things around. It's no longer a pure Google experience. And that's a very good reason to want to root the phone and get rid of the Verizon stuff. It's also a good reason for them maybe to block that. So you've been to xdadevelopers.com and you've read up on rooting the Nexus 6?
Yes. Yeah. Leo, you know what it is? It's not from Verizon. It was from the Motorola store.
Oh, well, then it's an, so then it's a Google.
It should have been unlocked. But...
Well, is it? Okay, you didn't get it from Verizon, but it, does it have Verizon stuff on it?
No, and it's, technically, it wasn't even supposed to be for Verizon.
Oh, good. You're using it on Verizon. Okay. Yeah, take the SIM out. That's be the first thing. Take the Verizon SIM out. You want to do the unlocking without Verizon being around, if you know what I mean. And then there is a very simple one-step rooter. Are you doing it on Windows or Mac or Linux?
I have both Windows and Mac.
Easier on Windows, I think. There's a one-step rooting device, rooting program that actually, there's, you know, you have to go through several steps. You have to unlock the bootloader first because it does come with a locked bootloader, oddly enough. Then once you've unlocked the bootloader, then you can get root, and then you could put a custom recovery on there. I frankly don't think there's any reason to change the ROM because you've got a Google Play Edition phone. I mean, it's clean and beautiful. In fact, there probably isn't a lot of reason to unlock this. Except maybe there's
some... You know
some...
why I want to do it?
Why?
Oh, I'm sorry to cut you off. I want to use the Wi-Fi tether. Right now I'm having to pay the $30 extra.
Right.
Because I have unlimited with Verizon. So
right.
I have to pay another $30. And I was trying to get around that. Using Wi-Fi tether.
Yeah. There are other reasons, too. For instance, Google, by default, has turned on software encryption of the data on here. This is one of the things Google's doing in response to NSA snooping. A lot of sites are reporting that encryption slows the drive speed down considerably. So turning off that software encryption might be another good reason to root. I don't know why it's going haywire. It's a pretty well-known hack, even though the phone's fairly new. A lot of people are doing this. I'd take out the Verizon SIM, see what happens. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I was going to root mine. I'm going back and forth. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888. Ask Leo. I got the blues, baby. 888-827-5536. I am probably foolishly going to unlock my Nexus 6 live on the air as as we speak. Maybe I shouldn't. Pete, did you check the box that said enable OEM unlock?
Leo, the first time I did it, I didn't, but then I found another video that said, you know, USB debugging and then clicking OEM unlock, and I still had no luck with it.
And you entered into bootloader mode and all of that? The instructions are pretty good on the website. I don't know why it's not working, but make sure you've got exactly the right one, that it matches. We just put a link in the show notes. You might have seen it in our chat room to the XDA Developers Forum that has a bunch of rooting tools. Turns out the Nexus 6 is fairly easy to root. Let me talk about what rooting is. It's different from jailbreaking on the iPhone. Jailbreaking the iPhone means you can shop in stores other than the Apple Store for iPhone apps. This is not recommended. You're opening up a can of worms, But usually these jailbreak exploits on iPhone take advantage of security flaws in the iPhone to do it. They often open you to other issues. If you download malware from these third-party stores, you can really get in trouble, mess up your system. I just don't recommend jailbreaking an iPhone. You bought an iPhone because you like what Apple's done with it. Don't mess with it. On the other hand, Android, which is based on Linux, is really an open operating system in many ways. And one of the things Google's always said is, sure, go ahead. If you're smart enough to give yourself root privileges, that is, make yourself an admin, have at it. They don't make it too easy, and I think there's a good reason for that. It's just like any computer. Normally, we recommend when you're using a computer, you not run as administrator. You run as a limited user. It's harder to get into trouble. The bad guys don't have access because they generally will get the same access you have. So limiting yourself limits them. So it's just a smart thing to do. On an Android device, it's the default. But if you jump through a few simple hoops, most manufacturers, and certainly Google, will allow you to give yourself root privileges, make yourself administrator. But you have to understand that with great power comes great responsibility. And the administrator of a phone can erase the phone, can do all sorts of damage, and of course can let in malware. So it's a good idea to kind of know what you're doing and know why you want to do it. Or do it with a phone you don't care if you lose. And this is one of the reasons I think the Nexus phones are so great. They're generally inexpensive. Well, they had been up to the Nexus 6. And for some people, these are the extra phone they use for Android development, or they want to experiment or hack around with it. So I think it's a good little geeky thing to do. And it's harmless on Android, as long as you understand that there's some risk that you might turn your phone into a lovely piece of glass that is no longer usable. I don't recommend it on iPhone. I think it's fine to do on Android, if you know how, if you know what you're doing. Just be careful. Be careful out there. Paul is in Pasadena. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Leo. How you doing?
I am well. How are you?
Good, good. Thanks. So I just upgraded to an iPhone 6 Plus about 3 weeks ago.
Giant phone! Upgraded from 5S?
No, I had a Galaxy S3 Mini.
Okay.
So I really love the phone. People said it was too big, but I like it. The only problem I'm having is every time I receive a call from a landline, I hear my own voice.
Every time you receive a call from a landline, you kind of get echo back?
Echo back,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, that's annoying.
So I took it back to T-Mobile. They put a new SIM card in. They reset the phone. They updated the OS. Didn't it fix the problem?
Oh, good.
So I reported. It did not.
Did not fix the problem. Okay.
Right. So I reported it to T-Mobile customer care, and they said they would turn it over to their engineering department to work with Apple engineering. Okay. But I haven't heard back from them.
Okay.
I just wondered if people in your chat room have heard of this problem and are having the same problem.
Interesting. So it echoes your voice back, but only with landline phones.
Only with landlines, and it doesn't matter whether I'm on Bluetooth in the car or have it Bluetooth off or Wi-Fi calling or Wi-Fi off.
That's really interesting. I'm not sure why that would be at all. And that sounds like neither was T-Mobile. I wonder if does it have to do with the Wi-Fi calling feature?
Well, somebody said to try turning that off, so I turned that feature off.
Yeah.
Somebody else told me to turn. I think it's noise suppression or notification.
Yeah.
That off, and that didn't fix the problem.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if it's a problem between the Apple iPhone 6 Plus and the type of signal that T-Mobile uses.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think some mode is enabled on there. You know, normally it's kind of weird. On a regular landline, in the past anyway, you've always heard yourself coming back on the landline. But on cell phones, you didn't. And people got used to the idea that you couldn't hear yourself. At first, one of the side effects was people would talk on cell phones really loudly because they couldn't hear themselves. That's why, by the way, AT&T, Ma Bell, in her infinite wisdom in the earliest days of phones, fed a little bit of the sound back into the earpiece so you wouldn't talk like this.
Yes.
But you're getting it delayed, so it's an echo, kind of.
It's an echo, and it's really annoying when you're trying to talk.
That sounds like it's coming not from the phone, and there are features on the phone that you can, I think, turn that on. But it sounds like it's coming back from the T-Mobile network, which means that it's delayed, which means it's very disconcerting. If you've ever listened to yourself delayed by half a second even, It's extremely disconcerting. It's like doing, it's like speaking at a ballpark. Today,
exactly.
I consider myself. It's very distracting. I don't, you know, I don't know. Nobody in the chat room. By the way, it's something that happens to us from time to time here on the radio show. You might hear a caller every once in a while. I'll be able to hear myself coming back on the phone line. And we have never been able to figure out what it is. And it doesn't happen all the time. And it's some sort of weird side effect of the phone network that I just don't understand and I don't know. So is it every call that comes to you from a landline, from any person anywhere?
Well, I've only received calls from my two brothers. One's on AT&T, one is on
interesting
Verizon, and then my parents who are on Verizon also. Or AT&T.
So it happens from non-T-Mobile networks.
Yes.
Yeah, I wonder if there's something to that. This isn't really the place for us to diagnose it. The chat room says yes, they've seen it, but we've all seen it. I've seen it on this line occasionally, but if you're getting it consistently, I think Apple should just replace your iPhone.
Okay.
And see if it happens.
My next step.
Yeah, see if it happens with a different. If it happens with another iPhone, then we know it's the network, not the phone. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Lynn in Santa Clarita, California. Hi, Lynn.
Hi. It's cool to be on your show.
It's cool to have you on. Thank you for calling.
I'm a teacher, and I've worked with Mac for a long time. I really like a lot of the programs, but it's come to the time I need to get a new one on a low budget. This is going to be it for a long time, so I want to make sure I get the right one. I've been looking at the Air and getting an external hard drive if I absolutely needed a CD, you know, drive or a external CD thing, and then getting an external flash drive if I needed extra space, you know, or just going with the MacBook Pro or going with the really awesome MacBook Pro that is used but has a whole bunch of cool programs already installed on it.
Yeah, that makes me nervous. It's used. Okay, so you're buying it from an individual.
Yeah, I looked at some.
And he says, hey, I'm just going to put all my programs on there, and you can use them. That's legal if he transfers the programs to you and deletes them on his own system. My guess is that's not what he's planning to do.
Because a lot of them say it's like already installed iLife this or I Photoshop that and
yeah.
Already installed.
iLife comes with the Macs, all the new Macs. Photoshop does not. Photoshop's a very expensive program which can only be licensed on one computer at a time. So if he continues to use it on his new Mac, then it won't work on the old one.
Okay.
So I'm always I don't like it when people do that. I'm always suspicious that they're either you know, pirating the programs or they're kind of misleading you as to its usability.
Okay.
So don't,
what would you suggest? I go with the bigger used one, or
is the issue? How much do you have to spend?
I have $1,000, but I really would be okay with spending less.
I don't recommend getting used from an individual. You don't. Okay. It's like getting a used car. You don't know exactly what's going on with that Mac. Apple sells refurbished Macs. That's safe. So at the Apple Store, there is a refurbished section. You can just Google refurbished Macintosh Apple.com. And you can find it very quickly. They're not as big a discount, but they're a few hundred bucks. They're also fully warrantied by Apple. So you're getting the Apple warranty by doing that. You wouldn't be if you buy it from a third party.
Okay, so I will not look on Amazon anymore.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
Okay.
I wouldn't. I mean, you can buy a new one on Amazon. Amazon also sells new ones, but I wouldn't buy it from a third party, no. Now, as to whether you need – really, the question you're asking is not Air versus Pro. Is Retina display versus non-Retina display?
Oh, that doesn't matter to me.
Then I would get the Air. I would get the 13-inch Air. It's got the longest battery life of any Mac at all, 13 hours.
Awesome.
Much more than any Pro. The screen is not Retina, though. It's a normal Mac screen. If that's not an issue for you, I wouldn't worry about that. And maybe as a teacher, you're still using CD-ROMs in some form, but no one else is. That's why Apple stopped putting them in its machines.
Okay. And so if I absolutely had to, I could get a CD
and
drive.
You could get a cheap CD drive that you just plug in the USB port.
Okay, an external flash if I need extra memory.
Yeah, I mean, it comes with the memory it comes with. So get 4 gigs of RAM. That's plenty, by the way. In fact, the base model MacBook Air 13-inch is all you need. Don't get extra processor power. Don't get extra storage. Don't get extra RAM. If you run out of hard drive exactly as you say, you can get an external drive. In fact, you should eventually anyway for backup.
Awesome. You really helped me out.
I think you're going to love it. And it's so light. Is the only real question you answered, which is I don't care about a Retina display, the super high-res display. Good on you. That saves you a lot of money, gives you much better battery life, and better performance because pushing all those pixels slows the thing down.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you for calling, Lynn. I appreciate it. And thank you for being a teacher. The most important job in the world. Really is. And it kind of – I wish we paid teachers a heck of a lot better. And I know you're on a budget, and I bet you anything you want this to help you with your work. And if you worked in private industry, of course, they'd probably buy you one. But teachers end up spending a lot of their own money on the stuff they need to be better teachers. Sometimes that makes me sad. Jennifer, San Diego, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Thank you so much for taking my call. I'm also a teacher.
Yay! Teacher time!
Woo-hoo! My son would like to record video from a Nintendo 3DS and then post it online to YouTube. And I was wondering if there was a, well, you tell me what I need to do.
I don't know if you can. I'm going to have to defer to the chat room on this. The 3DS is really cool, but it doesn't have... I don't know of a way to record video without just taking a picture of the screen. Let me see if I can see if there's a video out port on the Nintendo 3DS. Yeah, wow, amazing. You can get a 3DS capture board. Holy cow. Holy cow. So the people's ingenuity never ceases to amaze. So this is it connects to the USB port on the 3DS. Video and audio will be outputted from that. It'll go to a computer. Do you have a Windows machine?
Yes, I do.
All right. So it'll go to a computer, and then on the computer, he can record it and edit it and put it on YouTube. And that's probably what he'd want to do anyway. You don't want to just put the raw video up, right?
Okay.
So
that's probably the only way, because it looks like they're about
$300. Let me see.
And then, okay.
Yeah, $245. So make your son do some chores or something.
That's what we were thinking. There's somebody that posted online that he would sell him his capture card.
I think this would be this is an example of something you could safely buy on eBay or from a third party. Yeah, because this is the kind of thing somebody buys, uses a little bit, and they say, I'm never going to use this again, and sells it.
Okay.
And it's hardware. Okay. It's not going to break. I mean, it's just a physical thing. So there's some amount of trust, as there always is when you buy stuff online from an individual. But presuming this person seems trustworthy, this wouldn't be a bad thing to buy used.
Okay.
Now, you need an original 3DS.
The original 3DS. Okay, we have that.
Yep. But other than that, it looks like, I mean, I've never tried it, but let me ask in the chat room, anybody try this? Has anybody used this? Because, I'm just saying I found something, and I guess you did too. And if you could find it, used, on the face of it, this makes sense that this would work.
Okay.
So apparently nobody in the chat room has tried it, but
okay.
we'll keep watch. This is how old's your son?
He's 12.
Every 12-year-old in the world wants to have a YouTube channel, and almost all of them want to show gaming.
Right.
This is really, it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, well, it's very popular now.
It's really popular. The biggest stars on YouTube are the ones doing this.
Yes, Shady Penguin is a really
Shady Penguin and person. PewDiePie and... Yeah. I mean, these guys, some of these guys are making hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Right.
But now he won't. Your son, won't. Not on a 3DS game. You know what makes these guys successful is they are funny themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not the game. It's not what they're doing with it so much as the things they say as they're playing. I don't think they're that funny, but apparently 12-year-olds do.
Right.
Hey, it's good to talk to you, Jennifer.
Okay, thank you so much. I love listening to your show.
Thank you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We don't know how much PewDiePie makes, but $4.5 million a year wouldn't surprise me. He's the number one guy on YouTube. Strikes me that probably this generation doesn't even know what "it's a gas" means. This comes from an earlier time, a simpler time.
A simpler time, exactly.
That's Dick DeBartolo on Lead Belch, part of the...
A time when hacking meant steaming an envelope open.
That's right.
That was hacking.
Dick DeBartolo is the Gizwiz. He's also Mad Magazine's maddest writer, and it was in the 70s he made this recording with
Yes,
with
and we
belching.
Did it again. Yeah, in the, we did it again in the 80s for Disco Mad.
Yeah, I had this when I was a kid. I remember it came in my Mad Magazine, a little vinyl record that you tore out of the magazine.
Discs. Yeah.
You'd put it on a turntable. Anybody know what that is, kids? And it was a little lightweight, so maybe you'd weight it down with a quarter. And then you'd put your needle on there, and it would... You could only play it like twice before it was really unlistenable.
Yeah, we used to recommend that you record it off onto something else.
If you ever want to hear this again, make a recording. Dickie D joins us each week, not to talk about Mad Magazine, although we do enjoy that, but to, in fact, to talk also about gadgets, and he's got a gadget of the week every week.
What's yeah, well, actually, I'm doing three cheapy gadgets, under $10, for people that are still looking for gift ideas.
Okay.
One of them I know you know very well, Eggheads. You probably don't. Eggheads is a little LED light, couple little, I think there are five LEDs in there.
It
looks like
Eggheads.
Eggheads, and it looks like an egg. What's neat about it is leave it on your nightstand. When if you have to get up to go to the bathroom, do whatever, you tap it once.
Yeah.
It goes on and stays on
as
long as you're walking with it.
Yeah.
You tap it off when you put it back, but if you forget, after 6 minutes, it'll automatically shut off. So to conserve batteries. And it's just a nifty little, and it's bright. I like it a lot. It's little eggheads. And
where do we
bucks.
Find this?
Bed Bath & Beyond has it for $7.99.
Wow.
Second one is from Night Eyes. That company, I know you know Night Eyes. The Quickstand, I love the Quickstand. Size of a credit card.
Yeah.
And it's aluminum. You pop out the little stand, and then you can insert your phone. A tablet up to 7 inches, and it's an easy way to have an iPhone or smartphone stand, either landscape or portrait. That guy is also under $10.
Wow.
And the third one, I know you know, and God, I gave, they were kind enough to send me 18 of them to give away at ABC, and everybody there loved them, but you guys at Twit used them all the time, the Nest.
Oh, the thermostats, the smart thermostats.
No, no, we didn't give away those.
What?
I'm talking about the Nest, the little guy for your headphones.
Oh, yeah. That's a little confusing because there's the Nest thermostat.
But this is
the 50-cent plastic thing you put your headphones in.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not quite sure why one of them didn't change their name.
Yeah.
I think this product was probably first, but... I think the thermos is Nest, and I think they're trying to distinguish it that the earbud storage container is the Nest.
The Nest. But, or the Nest. Nest, yes.
The Nest. And easy way to store headphones, earbuds, so that when you take them out of your pocket or your backpack, the cables are not twisted. And they also are under $10 on Amazon.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Well, Dick, as always, great stuff. Now, I bet we could find more of this lovely stuff on your website. Is that correct?
I bet you could.
If I went to gizwiz.biz
right now and clicked on your picture, you would see pictures of these three things.
You're kidding.
No.
Would I? And now I saw you on World News Now the other night doing holiday gas. Would I see that on this website too?
You will see that too.
Wow.
You will see that too.
All right. Gizwiz, that's his website, Gizwiz dot B-I-Z. And where you see the Gizwiz visits the tech guy, click that link and you will see all the stocking stuffers, the Eggheads Wobble Nightlight, the Quick Stand from Night Eyes, and the Nest, not a Nest.
Yes.
Which is for wrapping up your head.
I would be a real sport if I gave everybody ABC one of those.
But all of these are around $10. That's a good deal.
All under $10. $9.99.
Yeah. If you also are, while you're there, want to play a little game and win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine, click the What the Heck Is It contest link. Figure out or come up with a clever answer for whatever this gadget is pictured on the page. And Dick might be sending you an autographed copy of Mad Magazine, with the 20 dumbest people, events, and things of 2014.
Exactly.
I love it. Hey, Dickie D, thank you so much. Dick hosts the GizWiz podcast on our network, twit.tv/DGW. He's also a regular Mad Magazine and on many other places because he'll, anywhere with a camera, that's where he'll be. You'll find him there. GizWiz.
Yeah. Unlike you.
Oh, no. Yeah. No, I don't like to do any of this stuff.
No.
I like to stay at home, read a nice book by the fire. I don't like this electronic stuff's never going anywhere. Never. Thank you, Dickie D.
Okay, buddy.
Let's see. We're almost wrapped up here. Let's see if we can get one more call in. Clinton, Calgary, Alberta, Canada. Hello, Clinton.
Oh, hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing great, thanks. It's finally nice to get a hold of you.
What can I do for you?
I have a small business.
Yeah.
And I'm a cable installer, but I don't work for the major cable companies. Like, I'm a contractor.
Okay.
So I used a Squarespace and opened up a web page.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Excellent service. The staff were very helpful and got the page up and going with no problems. Now, my question is, you say search optimization?
Yes.
I was just wondering, could you maybe point me in the right direction?
So there are a lot of people selling snake oil for SEO. And yeah, you've got to be careful because you can get in trouble if you get an SEO, search engine optimization guru, who is overly aggressive. Yeah. They can actually get you in trouble with the Google and even, in a worst case scenario, get you delisted. And that would mean you don't exist at all. If you go to google.com/webmaster, google.com/webmaster, you'll see the webmaster tools. They're the title on that page. You want to be found on the web. We want to help. My strong recommendation is you follow Google's rules. You'll never get in trouble with Google if you do. Okay. They know better than anyone, including some third party, how it works. Of course, what they'll tell you is the best thing to do is have the best possible content. But there are some other things you can do to help.
Okay.
But don't fall for the guys who'll come along and say, for $300, I'll put you number one in the search results on Google. A, they can't. B, that's a waste of money. And C, they could even do something worse, which is make Google punish you. And they don't get punished. You get punished by getting delisted. So don't fall for that.
Yeah. Okay.
But, basically, I can tell you the basic rule is Google ranks you higher when more people link to you.
But right.
So there are a few things you can certainly do, with your site, having a site map. By the way, Squarespace does that automatically. That helps the search engines find you and search through your content. You should put lots of content on there that's relevant to your topic.
Okay.
That's important. And then just if you can get others to link to you, that will help too. But all of this is indicated on the webmaster tools at Google, and they're done by my friend Matt Cutts and others, and it's so good. Google.com/webmaster. Good luck. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows and Windows Weekly, Macintosh and MacBreak Weekly, iPad and iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.